Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the best of the Book Nook on WYSO. Do you want to live a long time? Do you want to live many years? Do you want longevity? Well, stay tuned. On the best of the Book Nook, we're going to bring you a longtime voice from public radio, Dr. Zorba Pastor, as he talks about the longevity code and how you could live a long life if you start living right. That's right now on the best of the Book Nook.
Let's look at some of these spheres in the sphere of mental and in the sphere of physical. You always list tobacco number one. What's the deal with tobacco? You know, here we have this legal substance in this country. We can see what it does to people, and everybody still smokes.
And that's right. That's
crazy.
Right. That's exactly it. No, it definitely is crazy. Well, you look at a few things, you find some interesting stuff. First of all, what state do you think is the state where people are the least likely to smoke? In other words, the lowest percentage of smokers. Take a guess.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say North Carolina.
No. You knew those would be the most smokers. Kentucky and North Carolina vie for number one, by the way. The state where you are least likely to smoke is Utah.
Uh-huh.
Because Mormons don't like smoking. They
sure.
don't smoke in public. They're down to about 14%.
Idaho is probably up there, too.
And it shows you how a social attitude and the cultural attitude, and that's, you can just look at it right there and say, bang, it's right here, social relationships. You have social relationships. You have a spiritual path with the Mormons. They say don't smoke for all those different reasons. You have less smoking. You have people who live longer, don't die of as much heart disease from cigarettes and as much lung cancer. Number one leading toxin in the world is cigarettes. Look at it from an educational point of view. If you are a high school dropout, the chances that you will smoke are roughly 30 to 40%. If you have 2 years of college, the incidence of smoking is about 18%. So clearly, education plays a role in that health habit. As you become more educated, and obviously it's not that you need college to be educated, but as you learn to learn, then you realize how silly and dumb smoking is. And if you start to smoke, I smoked for 3 years in college, you then conquer the habit and get over it. And I remember when I quit smoking, it was not easy. And we're talking about many years ago, more than 30 years ago. I still, on a bright sunny day, I'm sitting down having a beer and having a pizza, and all of a sudden that desire to have a cigarette wafts into my soul. Now, I don't go and take that cigarette anymore because that's silly, but the desire is still there. I'm amazed at how addictive tobacco could be. It's 30 years later, and it still comes into my brain. But that's the number one physical toxin you can get rid of.
And out there right now, traversing the highways and byways of the Miami Valley, we have people who are smoking, and they're going, okay, and they're putting it out right now in the ashtray. They're going, oh, maybe I should think about this. Okay, and the next one you talk about is a diet of fried and processed foods with few fruits and vegetables. You actually encourage people to eat servings of fruits and vegetables 6 or 7 times a day.
Absolutely. In fact, the data is very clear that the easiest thing you can do, and I sort of rate these boosters, within my book, is that you can have 5 to 7 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And you look at the data is abysmal. Women in this country, roughly half the women, have 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, and men have less. They have about 40%. And if you take away the French fry, you take away about a serving a day for the average American. And the French fry is not your ideal vegetable. And yet it is extremely easy. Even if you don't cut the fat out of your diet, even if you don't exercise, there's an extremely easy thing you can do. You can add that this way. 6 ounces of orange juice in the morning, that's a serving. Make it 12 ounces, you've got 2 servings. Make it calcium fortified, and that's equivalent to 2 glasses of milk worth of calcium. So you get your calcium, you get your 2 glasses of orange juice. At lunch, vary it. Make it tomato juice. Very important for men because it may reduce the incidence of prostate cancer, and there's variety, different micronutrients. Then sometime mid-morning, sometime mid-afternoon, have a piece of fruit. Instead of those chips, have your piece of fruit. And all of a sudden, you've got four servings of fruits and veggies before you've even had breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And if you make that a habit, and remember, for anyone over the age of 45 or 50, seatbelts were not always a habit. It took a long time before you finally got in the car and felt naked without buckling the belt. It's the same thing with fruits and vegetables. Once you get in the habit, and it takes a little while to develop, your day will not feel complete without having them.
You also talk about very little or no physical activity. The couch spuds,
yes,
among
the
us.
Yes, the couch spuds. Well, there's some interesting stuff about the couch spuds. If you look back in 1900, no one would have predicted the lack of activity that occurred. And it really was Henry Ford that was the premier provider of lack of activity by making the car so accessible. And you see people, for instance, in malls today, they'll be in one side of the mall, walk out to their car if it's a big mall, and drive that car all the way around to the other side of the mall and go into the car in there over there because they don't even want to walk across the mall. Lack of activity. We're not made to have a lack of activity. We weren't born with the television set and the clicker in our mouth. We were born to move. And moving means incorporating it into your body. Because at the other extreme, you have the aerobics lobby, you know. I mean, aerobics are great if you like it. And if you don't like aerobics, they're not great. And most people, frankly, don't jog all the time. You look at the people that jog, but if everyone was jogging, there'd be roads would be filled in Yellow Springs and Dayton with joggers. Incorporate it every day. That's the goal. And there's very good data that came out recently in JAMA that show the people who simply walk up the stairs at work, walk around the block a few times at lunchtime if they will, park their car three or four blocks away from where they work and walk a couple of blocks, park at the end of the parking lot when they're in the mall rather than the closest to the store, actually begin to get benefit. And the whole goal there is something is better than nothing. Of course, a little more something is better than just a little something, but the whole thing is to move it. Move your body. You'll start to feel better.
My guest is Zorba Pastor. His book is The Longevity Code. Last Friday, I had another physician who sat right there where you're sitting, Deepak Chopra.
Oh.
He looks at a more holistic approach. He looks at the spiritual side. He looks at the brain, the mental side, the quantum side, as he calls it. Your mental sphere, longevity busters, I think aren't quite so obvious to most of us as the physical ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. A lot of us have low self-esteem. How does this hurt our longevity?
Well, the data that looks at longevity for things such as low self-esteem really looks at the depression issues. If you look at depression, you look at articles that have come out over the last 5 or 10 years in good scientific journals, Lancet, the New England Journal, etc., you find that depression is nearly as strong a risk factor as cholesterol. It is not as strong as high blood pressure. High blood pressure is the number one risk factor for heart disease. But depression and low self-esteem directly affects stress hormones. It increases adrenaline, increases cortisol in your body, makes you more likely to have a cardiac arrhythmia. That's what those stress chemicals do. More likely to have coronary artery disease. Those stress chemicals lay down cholesterol and make your blood more likely to clot. Anything that's stressful, anything that makes you angry. Articles on anger, back and forth. People who are angry, who rant and rave, who have these high levels of adrenaline and cortisol, clearly have an increase in stroke and heart disease. So where does low self-esteem fit? Well, it fits in that method, but it also fits in the indirect method. People with low self-esteem are more likely to drink, are more likely to smoke, are less likely to wear seatbelts, are much more likely to have a job that they find unsatisfying, and job satisfaction does play a role in longevity. There's some very good studies out of England that show that. So indirectly, low self-esteem can figure into those physical qualities, even though it's a very difficult thing to measure. I mean, how do you measure self-esteem? I can measure blood pressure, but self-esteem is a much more difficult thing to get a handle on today. Now, maybe 5 or 10 years from now it won't be, but it still is clearly a buster in your life.
So if you hate your job, Zorba, would it be better for your health to find a job you liked?
Yes, you should quit your job. No, I don't mean quit it today. I'll give you the best study on the market. There are many, many studies on this. Best study on the market. In America, I believe we should have equal access to longevity and death. I don't like the fact. I don't like this English study. You know, the English are much more class-oriented. In America, I think we should have equal access. The best study on the market, and there are many studies that show the same data, is called the Whitehall Study. These are people in Whitehall. They're the government workers. They've been followed for 50 years, and they have five different classes. That's what they call them. They call them classes of workers. The people in the top class are the bureau chief. The people in the bottom class are the custodians, and there are three other classes in between. When they control for health habits, diet and smoking and cholesterol, et cetera, diabetes, all those health habits and genetics, they find something very interesting that falls out. They find that occupation predicts longevity in that group. They all have equal access to health care, remember. The bureau chiefs live longer, regardless of their health habits, than the custodians by about a year to 2 years. And it's a graded response. In other words, the higher the level of the job, the longer they live. Now, then you look at that and you say, now, what are we looking at? We're looking at money. You know, is Bill Gates going to live to Methuselah? I don't like that as an idea.
Well, John D. Rockefeller did.
John D. Rockefeller did live a long time. He did. He also had other, he actually had some very good health habits. He was a vegan. He didn't smoke cigarettes. He was thin. He actually exercised every day. He did some other things.
He was mean. No, I'm just kidding.
But when you look at it, it's job satisfaction. That's what it's probably a marker for. And job satisfaction appears to be the ability to make a decision and have someone respect you. Now, in lower-level jobs, on the whole, you make fewer decisions, sometimes no decision at all, and respect is often to the wayside. The most respect you get is, okay, but you don't usually get that was a good job. The higher-level jobs, the jobs where you insert yourself into the job, is a job that gives you less stress. And Dan Levy from the Framingham Heart Study, who wrote the preface to the book, also believes that's a very important issue. And the reason that scientists and doctors don't discuss that is, how do you go to a doctor and the doctor gives you a prescription? Well, you know, you ought to quit your job. Well, that's very disruptive to society. You know, giving a prescription for Zocor or Zyban or Xanax, you know, or an antidepressant, that's pretty easy. Telling people they should quit their job, you know, that's an uncomfortable position for a physician and a patient. And that's really why it's not discussed within the realm of the medical care. And another reason why you cannot trust your doctor to solve your longevity code.
And another thing that comes to mind there is, why aren't we increasing productivity and longevity of our employees by telling them, you're doing a great job.
Well,
I respect what you're doing.
Yes, and that's exactly. I think if you look in America, and I'm not a management expert by any means, I think the good companies do that. You know, the ones you read about in the New York Times, I read the New York Times, and I occasionally will pick up a Wall Street Journal, and then I read a lot of other magazines. But I think the companies that do a good job are the companies that, quote, value their employees. And you look at GM, for instance, you look at the auto industry, which, of course, employs quite a few people in Detroit. As soon as they involve workers in decision-making in the factory, productivity increases and absenteeism decreases. They get less sick. And there's another interesting piece of data about how health and occupation fits in. If you look at low back pain, which is the chief form of disability in this country for people who do manual work, carpal tunnel is moving up there, but low back pain is still number one. And you send people to back school, and you teach them what they can teach, and you give them back braces. It doesn't do anything. It hardly changes the incidence of debilitating low back pain. There are two things that correspond with low back pain. One happens to be smoking. People who smoke have more disabling low back pain. Nobody knows why, but that's one factor in almost every study. But the other factor that comes out all the time is job satisfaction. If you don't like your job, your back pain is more disabling. If you like your job, you can tolerate it more. I mean, we're talking about, you know, not people who are malingering. We're talking about people who go to their job, they're not malingering. If they don't like their job, their back pain is much more painful to them in every single decent scientific study that's there. Back pain and other forms of pain figure very well into job satisfaction. So if we ignore that material sphere, that's only one part of the material sphere. Look at debt. I mean, we've all, maybe you haven't, but we've all, I certainly have been in debt and too much debt. Well, that certainly takes away life's sweetness when you're worrying about debt, and it takes away longevity. I mean, when you've got debt and you're thinking about it and you're worrying about it, that may be your first step. Your first step might not be joining that health club for $39.95 a month and adding more debt. Your first step may be quitting smoking, which gives you $1,300 more a year or $1,400 more a year, and not joining anything, paying off your debt so you can feel more relaxed about life. That is the approach that I hope to accomplish through my book.
I'm a person who is just about never bored. I love being on the planet.
I can see that.
You know, I love being here. I'm always busy. I love just about anything that I do. I love things that maybe would bore other people. Maybe I'm a boring person as a result, but I'm not bored. Now, I know people around me that complain of a sense of boredom, of a sense of ennui, and you put that down as a risk factor.
Yes, yes, it is. And I'll show you where it is a risk factor. If you look at what I call longevity mentors, now longevity is a function of your age. If you're 25, an old person is 50. Right? I remember 25. And if you're 50, it was some time ago, but I remember 50 looked old. And if you're 50, it's 75. And if you're 75, or 100. But you look 25 years ahead of you. You look at those people who you think are doing a good job, you prospect, they're doing a good job. And if you look at their qualities, you will almost always find three qualities they have. They are lifelong learners. They're always learning something, always doing something, like you said, on the planet. They're actively involved in life. They are not couch potato passive people. They may sit in front of the television. They may go to a movie. They may be passive at times, but they're active people. They're doing things. These are the ones you want to emulate, and they have hopefulness, which is not the same as optimism. Optimism is everything's going to turn out for the best, I know it. Hopefulness is I hope everything turns out for the best, and if it doesn't, hey, I'll do something else, and I'll get on with my life. Those are their three qualities. Those qualities fuel good quality longevity. We don't want length without sweetness. Boredom robs us of sweetness. And if you're bored, you have to figure out what it is that's making you bored. A lot of people are bored, get stoned all the time. They may drink alcohol all the time. They may have a job they don't like. They may be in a relationship they hate. They may not have ever, they're not taken a course for 20 years. There are a whole bunch of reasons behind boredom. But if you're bored, it's a marker for basic busters that are going on in your life. The lack of the boosters that give you longevity and the presence of busters. Boredom is a marker for something that you are doing wrong.
I'm a very fair person, and I don't mean, you know, the way I treat people. I mean my complexion is very fair. I've known since I was very young when I had my first severe sunburn, the sun and I cannot be good friends. I mean, we can visit briefly, but we cannot be good friends. Your booster number 14, a 4-star booster, is limit sun exposure. This is a real problem, isn't it?
Well, it is a problem. It's a problem in America. If you look at the incidence of melanoma, it has doubled and is on its way to triple. And the reason why it's tripled over the last, that's about the last 40 years, is because we have more leisure time and we spend time in the sun. It's also a cultural thing. If you look back to the culture of the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, suntans were considered to be bad. If you got a suntan, you were considered to be low lower class. If you look at India, if you look at Indonesia, and you look at the Europeans, on the most places, Europeans do not like to get suntans. They consider it to be bad. As the concept of California culture and the California ideal came into society, the suntan really started to be mainstream as something that was good. It's time for us to turn that corner. Habits are, you know, slow to change. And I happen to like the sun. If you're going to go out there in the sun, you've got to wear a hat. You've got to wear sun protection. For some people, they have to be really, really good, such as yourself. And for other people, they just have to be fairly good. You know, you've got to play to what it is. If you've got fair skin and you sunburn easy, you have to be careful. I have melanoma in my family. My dad had melanoma. That's what ultimately killed him at the age of 87. His three sisters died of melanoma. So I have to be careful in the sun. And I don't really love sunscreen, but I use it.
Also, you have one in here that I think we overlook quite often. I know I've overlooked it in the past. I love body surfing when I get near an ocean, and One false step, one stupid move, one wave too big. Booster 19, 4 stars, practice water safety. This this goes in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, it really does. If you look at death on water safety in Ohio and in Kentucky and in Indiana, a lot of that death is associated with people who don't know how to swim and are in boats and who have been drinking alcohol and the boat, they fall out of the boat. Eliminate that and you will eliminate roughly half of the deaths, and it goes across America. So death in water safety and alcohol turn out to go hand in hand. A lot of people get out there. In Wisconsin, we fish. They sit in the boat. It's hot. They have a couple of beers, and before you know it, they're down. But the other issue is that when you look at children water safety, they're often in the boat, and they're not wearing. They're not being safe. And if you're going to body surf in the ocean, you want to body surf with somebody else. You want to make sure somebody is looking at you. And I've been to Hawaii.
So they can haul your broken body back in, right?
You know, when you're with somebody else, sometimes you're just a little bit more sensible, too.
Obviously, you haven't seen me in the ocean. But,
there isn't an ocean in Ohio that I know of.
Well, yeah. You know, Springfield's just down the road, and the ocean is right next to Springfield. Do you watch The Simpsons?
I do watch The Simpsons. You're right. It is next to Springfield. Of course, we do have Springfield, Illinois, too, which is not too far from where I live in Wisconsin. I've been to Springfield, Oregon, and you know what? The town looks just like it does in The Simpsons. It's next to Eugene.
Oh, you think it's Springfield, Oregon?
Yeah, I think it's Springfield, Oregon. That's what the people in Eugene say. They say that Springfield is Springfield, Oregon, that Mac Groening comes from Springfield, Oregon, and his column Life in Hell, you know, which was the precursor to The Simpsons, was of course wonderful. He's a very special guy.
And in case you've just tuned in, we're digressing on the Book Nook. My guest is Zorba Pastor. We went from the longevity code to The Simpsons, but
okay. this is our relaxation. You can't one of my boosters is hang on to your sense of humor. That's a booster that's in here. You know, even in the Shakespearean tragedy of Hamlet, you had to have humor. So in the middle of our, you know, discussion on longevity, talking about The Simpsons is good for us.
Here's one I try to do and I forget a lot. Drink plenty of water.
Right. Some very good data on prostate cancer. Prostate cancer, by the way, about 30% of it is genetic, 70% is environment. We don't know what that environment is. Interesting data that has come out recently that shows that men who appear to drink more fluid, 8 to 8 glasses a day, and it doesn't mean 8 glasses just of water, because you can include any fluid you drink. Coffee, milk,
so
juice.
Whiskey, espresso.
Espresso would fit in there. Whiskey, if you drank 8 glasses, it would be another buster. But appear to have a decreased incidence of prostate cancer. And so I think I've decided to put that in. It's not a high star value, but each of these boosters have amplifiers. So if you've got prostate cancer in your family, your dad or your uncle had it, then that means that's a booster. You should look at it. It moves it up to a 4 or a 5 star one.
Now, you've given 5 stars to building a strong social network.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. That's as important as looking at your cholesterol. It's as important as quitting smoking, and it's as important as fruits and vegetables and taking an aspirin, you bet. If you do not have that good friend, and a good friend I define roughly as the person who you can call at 4 o'clock in the morning and say, I need to talk to you now. That's your good friend. Friends buffer the stresses of life. When you're having a tough day or a tough problem, you discuss it with somebody else, you feel better. I mean, that's what we do with our friends. We discuss the good stuff and the bad stuff. And having a good friend is just as important as paying attention to your cholesterol. And the data show it. It's that friendship is harder to measure, and therefore there's not as much science. But science is often is a catch-up thing. You look at the data on the Mediterranean diet. A guy by the name of Keyes discovered it back in 1955. He was in Italy, and he wanted to spend 3 or 4 more years with his wife. He had just finished a military stint, and he had a PhD. And so he wrote for a Fulbright and said, gee, can I stay in Italy and the Adriatic and Greece for 3 or 4 years and discover what these people are eating and drinking? And he had a nice time. He'd go from town to town. You can just picture it. And he discovered that people who ate lots of fruits and vegetables, did not eat a lot of saturated fats, often had a little olive oil. If they didn't have it in their cooking, they had a little aperitif, little glass of olive oil, and would drink a little wine, lived longer. Well, it was a long time. It wasn't until the mid-80s that we discovered that it was fibers. It wasn't until the 90s that we discovered it was the micronutrients such as flavonoids and carotenoids. But the observation was there in the 50s. So science here was 40 years behind the explanation of the observation. The observation we have now are that social relationships are a key factor in longevity. The measurement of why that is, I'll tell you in 2020 when I'm back on the show.
Very good. Very good. We'll pencil that in right now, Zorba. You talk about building the strong social network. There's somebody out there listening right now who is saying, you know, I'm new in the area. I don't have any friends around here, or I have a hard time making friends, or my friend died, my best friend. I miss him so much. How do I make a new friend?
Well, you paint a wonderful picture. I mean, it's a terrible picture, but the picture you paint is wonderful in that you look at that as a box and you say, how do I make that first step? The easiest first step you can do is to volunteer for something. There's always a volunteer organization looking for help. Now, volunteerism is part of my spiritual sphere. It's not just religious roots and Mother Nature and music. Volunteerism nourishes your heart. The Dalai Lama wrote the introduction to the book, and one of the reasons he wrote it is because of volunteerism. And he always says all the time, the wise, selfish person realizes when they do good for someone else and have compassion in their heart, they benefit too. So that person should do something on a volunteer basis. And the nice thing about volunteering is everyone always welcomes you like a lost cousin. And you can make wonderful friends. It's really superior to going to a bar.
Much superior, I would think. You don't get all the secondhand smoke, for one thing. Now, is the Dalai Lama someone that you can call at 4 o'clock in the morning, Zorba?
No. But it's not a coincidence that his foreword is on the book. I've been involved with Tibetan Buddhism since 67. I met Geshe Sopa, who is a young monk, came to the university to talk about Tibet in 67. There was no Tibetan scholar in this country at that time. I went invited by a professor, and I went to one of his classes. In fact, I saved a clip, interestingly, about him, and got to know him, was studying and meditating Tibetan Buddhism. I was a Zen student, and he interested me. And in 78, when His Holiness first came to America, my wife Penny and I were involved on the committee to bring him here. The first place he visited when the U.S. government let him in, they wouldn't let him in for years because of the China issues, was Madison, Wisconsin. It's the first place he came. Came to Madison. And we had an auditorium for people to see him. We had a high school auditorium. And let me tell you how many people showed up. 50.
Uh-huh.
That was all. And when he came after he got his Nobel Prize, another coincidence, of course, we had planned in 1989 to have him. It takes about a year and a half at that time of planning. And he got his Nobel Prize on a Monday. And the first public lecture he gave was in Madison, Wisconsin. And people thought, oh, he's coming to Madison. You know, what a cool. In fact, it had been a year and a half in planning. At that time then, there were 10,000 people who were listening to him. And he always talks about the heart. He doesn't talk about meditation. In fact, he says it's easy to go meditate in a forest and calm your mind. It's hard to meditate in the middle of chaos. And meditation that everyone can do is compassion. And I think there's good data that compassion increases that social sphere and reduces the stressors in your life. And that's an important thing to think about besides just taking your blood pressure pills or your aspirin or your multivitamin. You know, people in America are stuck on supplements. Supplements have a place, but they do not enhance longevity in and of themselves. The right supplements with the other psychosocial spheres and the right physical habits, that's the recipe that you want.
And that was the Best of the Book Nook with Dr. Zorba Pastor, talking about his book, The Longevity Code, longtime host on public radio of a program called On Your Health. And I love it that he's buddies with the Dalai Lama. And a lot of great information there about how you can live a longer life and hopefully a happier life. And wishing longevity to all of you who listen to this public radio station. Have a great weekend.